If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
In this town, there is no off-season. The news never stops, and neither do we. It's always game day in Cleveland with Andy Baskin and Daryl Leiter.
Deshaun Watson, center stage, whether it's on the field or off. That's what we're talking about today on It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. Thank you for hanging out with us. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm Andy Baskin. Of course, as always, if you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe, like us, love us, give us 1,000 stars, whatever you need to do to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland feed, and remember to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. Daryl, this Deshaun Watson thing has clearly been the story since the moment we found out he wasn't coming to Cleveland, then was coming to Cleveland, and now it sounds like we're going to get into a little bit more of the off-the-field stuff.
Yeah, the investigation appears to be on the back nine and headed down the stretch here with them speaking with him this week in Houston, Texas, to go over these accusations of sexual misconduct levied by at least 22 women in civil court. Of course, as we know, he escaped criminal prosecution. Two grand juries elected not to indict him, but these civil cases are going to go into next year. They're still in the discovery phase there, and that's going to go on. He's going to have to give depositions, and the evidentiary discovery portion of this civil lawsuit's going to go into July, early July. They'll, you know, take a break because the two parties agreed not to go to court for the trials so that Deshaun could concentrate on football. But the question is, how much football does Deshaun Watson have to worry about even concentrating on? Because at some point here, the NFL is going to come down with a ruling, whether it's he's not going to face any discipline because in their view he did nothing wrong, or they are going to discipline him in the form of a suspension, and a lengthy one at that. And, you know, a lot of people are throwing numbers of games out there. And right, the truth of the matter is we don't know. We don't know with this independent arbiter how much precedent is going to play into their decisions and their recommendations to the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell. We have no idea right now. But the fact-finding from the NFL standpoint continues. And this week it included conversations not only with Deshaun Watson, but Watson's legal team. And so we just have to wait and see how this thing plays out. We're in a jump-to-conclusion society and media business. And I think that with this situation, everyone just needs to take a deep breath and, you know, got to be careful here. But clearly this investigation is beginning to wrap up or get to the latter stages as far as the NFL is concerned.
Yeah, I find it interesting that, like, everywhere you turn, everybody seems to have a number for how many games he is going to be suspended or not suspended, or will he get suspended twice, or, you know, you keep hearing these stories keep popping up. I don't think there's any answer. Like, we don't know. They'll have the investigation's about to wrap up, right? League comes back. League says, okay, well, this is what we think the discipline should be. And then it goes to Sue Robinson, who's a former federal judge. which is new. So, like, when I keep hearing people say, Ben Roethlisberger, look at this, or look at past precedent, or look how long this person was suspended, or people that want to bring in Trevor Bauer into this situation,
yep,
forget about all that. Like, that's just not – I do think we're in a new world, and it could be if you want to see him play football, it could be good, or it could be – or you could be looking at the Browns going, oh, my God, I can't believe they just signed some guy who's never going to play. I mean, the extremes are there because – this new step in the process under the CBA makes things interesting if you're looking at the story. And right. I find it interesting that the CBA turns to a former federal judge in Sue Robinson to listen to the case, because I'm wondering how Sue Robinson interprets the case as someone that is concerned about public opinion, concerned about protecting the Shield. I don't know why. I don't know if that's a mandate for her, because if it was about protecting the Shield, I think he'd be suspended now, and I don't think we'd see him for a while.
Right.
But
well,
if you get into the legal part of it, Daryl, I wonder how she's going to interpret it, how she's going to look at the case, and how she'll determine, you know, court of public opinion versus the legal part of it, because she's done legal her whole life.
Right. And so here's how this works. If the investigation comes back with no policy violation occurred on behalf of Watson, he will not be disciplined, and everybody just moves on. Also,
wait, stop there, Daryl. Daryl, stop right there. Do you? I mean, this is like.
Well, I'm going through this. I'm going through the steps.
No, I know.
Here,
I'm
so
just
people
saying.
Understand
I'm saying
this.
No, yeah. And so what I'm saying to you is, and or I'm asking, not saying. Based on everything we've known before, this is an easy personal conduct policy case compared to everything else that's ever happened, correct?
I understand. I'm going through the factual step by step here. Okay.
Okay.
So if they determine that, then nothing happens. Also, per the CBA, the NFL cannot appeal the decision from the arbiter either. That's an important thing too. Now, if the independent arbiter determines that a violation occurred, then the arbiter can determine the punishment for it, okay? If the NFL disagrees with the punishment that is recommended, the league then can appeal that to the commissioner, okay? Who obviously has power over the process once it's determined a violation of the conduct policy has taken place. So I want to get those details out there because they're important. I understand. Right now, clearly, based on what has come out, not only in the court filings, but some of the reporting on these depositions and the contents of these depositions from some of these alleged victims, it does not paint a very promising picture for Deshaun Watson. I understand all that. I'm trying to step-by-step factually explain how this whole process is going to work. The commissioner is not going to put Watson on the exempt list because there is no criminal element at this time. He was not indicted by two grand juries. This is not a criminal matter. This is a civil matter. Therefore, the commissioner exempt list is not in play in this situation. So, it looks like Watson's going to get suspended if we're just looking at the situation, and I understand that. We don't know that for a fact, and I think that we have to be very careful in that. And also, too, these are allegations. Yes, the allegations are serious. They're disgusting. They're appalling. Whatever adjective you want to use, okay? The allegations lay out a pattern of very disturbing behavior. Deshaun Watson has maintained his innocence. He says that he has said that he is going to defend himself vigorously. He has no intention of settling these lawsuits. I can tell you the NFL and the Cleveland Browns would love him to settle these lawsuits. But it is his right to defend himself. And it appears that he is going to take these cases to court. I found Mike Florio's comments this week about the civil cases somewhat interesting, coming from a former lawyer that he is. He was talking about how hard it is to win each and every one of these civil cases. The thought that him going 22 for 22 in a court of law, just probably is not going to happen, is how Florio explained it in a couple of his appearances on national radio shows, the Rich Eisen show, Dan Patrick show, among them. So I just, trying to stick with facts here. The facts that are being presented from these alleged victims certainly paint a very grotesque picture about a disturbing pattern of behavior. Civil, obviously, completely different from a criminal proceeding. And, where the NFL is concerned, there's a lot of latitude in what they determine to be conduct detrimental to the league. So, everyone's trying to come up with a number like you were talking about, Andy. Is it going to be 2 games? Is it going to be 4 games? 6 games? 8 games? Does he get the full season? How much does the Trevor Bauer suspension with Major League Baseball play? And I'll say this about Trevor Bauer. It's my understanding, just based on what I've read, that there was some evidence that was used again, in that determination by Major League Baseball. You know what I'm saying? Whether it was pictures or testimony or police reports or whatever, I think that there was a lot more evidence than physical evidence, I should say, in that determination than maybe what is available for this whole Watson situation. So it is a he said, she said issue. You know what I'm saying? These alleged victims have made these claims in civil court. They're exploring the validity of those claims with the depositions and whatnot. And right now I think that the league, their number one concern is trying to verify the validity of these accusations that have been made against Deshaun Watson. And if the league suspects that there is validity to those claims, then I think they're going to throw the book at Deshaun and discipline him rather severely.
The one piece that I think is different here is that if whatever Judge Robinson determines, but if it, what seems weird is Roger Goodell seems to have the ultimate power, like he always has, except for one piece, that if Sue Robinson says no punishment, no disciplinary, that's the end. That's the only difference, I think, between this and any other case that they've listened to as far as the personal conduct policy.
Well, the players wanted to take some of that out of the commissioner's hands. They didn't want the commissioner to continue to have that absolute power. And I think
it's crazy. I do think he has too much power.
I really think that this new process that they have put in place with the independent arbiter on top of the independent investigation, I think that that's a positive step forward in that. The fact that you have a former U.S. district judge involved in this process who has a very deep understanding of criminal law as well as civil law. So I actually like just taking a step back away from just the Deshaun Watson situation, just in general. I think this new disciplinary process is much better than the one that they had before, where you had the investigation, it goes to the commissioner's desk, he hands down the ruling, end of story. So I like this new process. I think it's more fair to the players involved, and I think it helps the league take a more balanced approach to player discipline as well.
One other hook here, and then because we have other stuff we want to talk about. But, I think for the first time, Roger Goodell has an out. Like, if Sue Robinson comes back and says, nope, no reason for discipline, and it's over, Goodell could come back and go, that's not what I was going to do, but this is what the CBA says, and this is where we've got to move forward on it.
Right.
Just keep that in the back of your mind somewhere down the road. It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. If you like what you're listening to, remember to subscribe to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland feed. And in fact, we invite you to partake in the show like we will today. We'll do a little mailbag today at Game Day CLE, at Game Day CLE in future shows, because we've got a lot of folks that have already chimed in and want to get inside the mailbag. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But next, Baker Mayfield. There is part of this storyline that will not go away. Daryl and I are going to take out some shovels, and we're going to bury it next.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's always game day in Cleveland. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm Andy Baskin. Daryl, let's put this to bed because I just think it's ridiculous. Baker Mayfield is not wearing a Browns uniform ever again. Unless something crazy happens and he does the LeBron retirement tour at the end of his career, maybe that could change it. Maybe if ownership was different and, well, clearly the coaching staff will probably be out of it. Well, who knows how long Baker will play in the league.
No. The coaching staff would have to be different.
Yeah, that's true, too. Where are we? I can't believe that there are national pundits out there that continue to say, Baker Mayfield, well, don't be surprised if he's playing for the Browns next year. That's not happening, right?
No, it's not going to happen for a couple of reasons. But the reason why it's still out there, one, Andrew Berry's trying to move the guy, right? So
you
float stuff out there to aid in that endeavor, number one. Number two, Andrew Berry never speaks in absolutes, right? When we have the opportunity to visit with him, he might not paint the entire picture for us and tell us everything we want to know and go into expansive detail like we would really want him to. He's never lied to us. And I think that that's important for people to understand. He does not lie when he's asked questions. He might be very ambiguous in his answers, but he just doesn't blatantly lie. But he also doesn't speak in absolutes, right? That's why they keep talking. It's a fluid situation. Anything can happen. Everything's on the table. We're considering everything, right? That's how he's speaking in regards to this Baker Mayfield situation. Ergo, when people ask him, hey, if Watson isn't available this year and the NFL really drops the hammer, would you guys turn to Baker? And, of course, his response is probably along the lines of, well, we're not ruling anything out at this point. And then all of a sudden now it's, hey, there's a chance Baker Mayfield might play for the Browns this year. When in reality, the real answer is, not a snowball's chance in hell is Baker Mayfield ever going to play for the Cleveland Browns again. We brought in Deshaun Watson. We brought in Jacoby Brissett. We brought in Josh Dobbs. We just signed this young man from the rookie minicamp that tried out, Felix Harper. We got four dudes in front of Baker Mayfield. Felix Harper will play for the Cleveland Browns this year before Baker Mayfield does. That's just the reality of what's going to happen. Also, the other part of this, Baker Mayfield does not want to play for the Cleveland Browns ever again, okay? He doesn't want to play for Kevin Stefanski ever again, okay? I mean, those two were like oil and water last year as far as butting heads and not seeing eye to eye. So it's not going to happen. But I understand the reason it's still out there, Andy, is because Andrew Berry in the organization right now does not and will not and cannot speak in absolutes and just tell people, yeah, no chance in hell this dude is playing for us again, because they're trying to get him out of here. And so everybody in the NFL knows he's never playing for the Browns again. Everybody knows the Browns have to get rid of him, and that really hurts – the ability to try and make a trade. And that is why you don't see teams bum rushing to get up there and make a move to get Baker Mayfield. Now, if the Browns cut Baker Mayfield today, as we have this conversation right now, Andy, if they cut him today, you'll have 10 teams competing to sign Baker Mayfield. It's a completely different scenario between just, you know, maybe throwing a couple of million bucks at a guy that you don't have to pay a lot of money to, because the Browns are on the hook for over $19 million, I should say, in guaranteed salary, versus giving up draft assets or any other assets to acquire the guy. There's a difference there. So, you know, Baker is not going to play for the Cleveland Browns again. Just Andrew Berry and the organization can't speak in those terms right now because they're trying to trade him.
Daryl, I still feel like the whole Baker Mayfield situation came down to one moment. And that moment, if true, like I don't have – you tell me if you've verified this or not, because I don't have 100% verification on it. If true that Jimmy wanted to talk to Baker after Deshaun Watson said no the first time and Baker said no, do you have verification of that? Do we know that that's 1,000% true?
I have heard that, but I've not heard that from multiple people. So – Baker nuked himself.
Okay,
I think it's fair to say he nuked himself, though, because when he, the night that the Browns got back on the plane to come back to Cleveland from Houston after meeting with Deshaun, Baker put the statement out on Twitter that basically thank you / goodbye to the city of Cleveland, right? And the Browns.
There was still time to turn around after that.
Correct. The Browns, after Deshaun.
Because Baker Mayfield fans. Right. But Baker, even when Baker put that statement out there, that could have been Baker reacting to the fact that everyone knew the Browns were talking to Deshaun.
Right.
And Baker, Baker could have just turned around and said, I had so many, social media things. People thought I was getting traded and I was out of here, or they were going to cut me or whatever.
Yeah, there was time to walk it back.
I just wanted to let my fans know in Cleveland and Browns fans. He totally could have walked that back, yes.
Yeah, but here's the timeline, right? The meeting takes place on a Tuesday. Tuesday night, Baker, puts out the statement. Wednesday comes, we all were, playing the waiting game, right? Thursday morning, Browns are informed by Deshaun, hey, you're off the short list, okay? Baker's people call the Browns. Once that gets out, Baker's people call the Browns and say, hey, we want out of here. We want to trade. And then the Browns are like, yeah, that's nice you want that, but he's under contract for one more year, and that's not going to happen. And that's out there. Then Friday comes, and I think then the Browns realize just what a mess they had on their hands. They get Deshaun's people back on the phone and said,
That was a brutal day.
Yeah, it was. Okay, well, what if we just go ahead and throw $230 million at you and we'll guarantee every single dollar of the contract? Will Deshaun reconsider? A couple hours later, hey, Andrew, you got a deal. Go ahead and give the Texans a call and work the trade out. It's we'll waive the no trade, come to Cleveland, sign the new $230 million contract. Boom, that's it. Now all of a sudden the Browns have to reverse course again, right? Because they went from preparing to move on without Deshaun Watson. And to your point about having time to backtrack from the goodbye, okay, Baker wanted no part of it. Baker was scorned at that point. He's like, you talk to Deshaun Watson, you're number one, basically, is what he did, okay? I'm done. I'm not coming back, whatever. Cut me, trade me, whatever you got to do with me. I am not going to play for you because you talked to Deshaun Watson without giving me the heads up. And Andrew Berry has acknowledged that he is disappointed that he couldn't let Baker Mayfield's representatives know that they were going to talk to Deshaun that day, before the news had gotten out. And that's just the way the NFL works sometimes, that the news comes out before the players are even told. I mean, God, players know that they're released, traded, waived, whatever, on social media sometimes before it gets to their representatives. The other part of this, too, that I think that people lose sight of, and that goes to the whole base of the disrespect that Baker Mayfield feels in this situation. And as a competitor, I totally understand Baker's emotions and anger and disappointment and frustration and everything else, right? is I honestly believe that there's a disconnect between what the Browns and Andrew Berry told Baker Mayfield's representatives at the Combine and their intentions this offseason versus what Baker Mayfield was actually told. I think that there really was a disconnect there.
Told by the Browns or told by
his own people. I think there's a chance that his people did not.
I was looking at the story. I agree. Yeah.
I think there's a chance his people did not paint the full picture for Baker Mayfield of what the Browns were going to do. I truly believe, going back to what I said earlier, Andrew Berry strikes me as a very honest person. And granted, yes, business of football and whatnot, but I find it difficult to believe that Andrew Berry at the Combine knowingly deceived Baker Mayfield's camp. I believe Andrew Berry when he says, yeah, we told him if there's a top flight elite quarterback that becomes available, we will pursue that. Otherwise, Baker is our guy. Our intention is to move forward with Baker. And then a couple weeks later, what happens? The opportunity to visit with Deshaun Watson comes up. The Browns viewed Deshaun Watson as an elite quarterback, clearly based on the contract they ultimately ended up giving him, right? And so they pursued that, which is completely consistent with what Andrew Berry says he told Mayfield's camp. So why would Baker be so angry at the Browns outside of the fact that, you know, you're looking in another direction at anybody at quarterback? Well, the only thing I can come up with is maybe Baker's people didn't exactly paint the picture for Mayfield properly or clearly, or Baker didn't have a clear understanding of what was said at the Combine. Therefore, we got to the point where the bridge has been nuked. There is no going back. Baker does not want to play for the Cleveland Browns ever again. I think deep down, the Cleveland Browns don't want Baker Mayfield to ever play for them again, right? But they can't speak in absolutes and say never, 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 because they are trying to get something for this guy rather than just have him sit at home in Texas the whole year and collect nearly $19 million in salary. So that's why this stuff is going to continue to be out there. People are going to continue to talk about it. And we just, I guess, every time it happens, maybe drinks are on you, Andy.
Okay. No, I'll pass because I can't afford it because the drinks are out there too many times. I'm done. It's always game day, Cleveland. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm Andy Baskin. We are going to the mailbag. Yeah, I'm pumped. We're going to bring Meredith in, and we're going to go to the mailbag. If you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland feed. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, you can always get in on the show at Game Day CLE.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's always game day in Cleveland. He's Darryl Ryder. I'm Andy Baskin. And we bring in Meredith Kane. Meredith, we haven't really heard from you in the first couple podcasts, but now you are all in, and you're going to help us out with the mailbag.
Yeah, we tweeted out from @GameDayCLE. We wanted your questions. We got a ton of really good questions, so we're going to get right into it. We're going to start with Ramos at Where is Ramos? If the Browns don't re-sign Clowney, what are their best options opposite of Myles Garrett?
I have a quick answer on this, Darryl, and I really want to hear what your answer is. I don't know. Are they – I mean, Chase Winovich, it seems like a place they – like, I don't think they're going to make any more moves. I think Winovich is going to have an unbelievable opportunity to make his mark here in Cleveland, and you also have Alex Wright. But outside of those guys, what do you think?
I think that's the road that they're going to go. If they don't bring back Clowney, they're going to go with what they have on the roster. And – they really like Alex Wright. They feel like he has the potential to be an impact player. I don't know necessarily what type of an impact he's going to have as a rookie. Third-round pick, though, we see third, fourth-round guys all the time come out and do some pretty great things in the league. So I think it comes down to a competition between Alex Wright and Chase Winovich in training camp.
So I'll follow up on that question. This is not Ramos. This is my question to you guys.
Right.
So I'm virtually tweeting at GameDayCLE. If Jadeveon Clowney does not re-sign with the Browns, where do you think he'll wind up?
Oh, that's a good question. I think whoever wants to write the biggest check. What do you think, Darryl?
Bingo. Yeah, I like guys that are open, honest, candid. I have no problems with players saying it's all about the money. And that's basically what Jadeveon Clowney said in his season-ending press conference at First Energy Stadium after that season finale, the win over the Bengals. He's like, hey, man, this is my chance to get paid, man. I got through the season healthy. I feel great. I'm not falling apart for the first time in a long time. So this is my chance to kind of cash in. I think that Jadeveon Clowney felt like he was going to get a multi-year contract this offseason that was going to pay him some rather large money. I don't know necessarily that market has materialized. He's not in a hurry to sign. I don't think that's necessarily reason for anybody to worry. I think that that's Jadeveon Clowney. Remember, it took him a while to sign with the Browns last offseason. You know, part of this, too, is guys just don't want to come in. Some of these guys don't want to come in and do the offseason program stuff, whether it's the OTAs, mandatory minicamp, and all that type of stuff. But, yeah, I think that Jadeveon Clowney will go where he can get paid.
Boom. Agree.
Our next question comes from Will Reese at WReese27 on Twitter. Do you think they sign Fuller?
I do not. I think that pretty much this offseason the Browns are – done, so to speak, shopping. I think that I would like them to sign Will Fuller. That would be great. I just don't think realistically. I would be disingenuous to our audience if I was like, oh yeah, they're gonna go after Will Fuller, they're definitely in the running. I don't know that that's realistic at this point as far as where Andrew Berry is thinking, because remember, Berry needs to sign some, or I should say, Berry needs to save some salary cap space here too. They've spent a lot of cash already this offseason. They need to save some cap space because they're going to have to do some restructures in the coming years. Berry has to look for today as well as look for tomorrow. I think he had last year, I think he played for like $10 million. I don't know that Berry would wants to spend that much money at this point. So I feel like it's unrealistic. I don't know how Andy feels, but that's just where I'm at.
I just don't see them going out. I mean, as much as you may like Wolf, and obviously he's got some experience and it'd be great to bring him in, you already have, two guys on that in that wide receiving core that are 6 foot. I mean, you brought in David Bell for a reason. So you've got Amari Cooper, who's like, what, six one. David Bell's in the same place right there. I just don't know if bringing in another receiver like that, although it'd be great to have him, and I would love to see him on the team. I just don't Would they be duplicating something that they think they might be able to get out of David Bell? That's the only, you know, is every wide receiver on this team going to be 6 foot? I don't know if that's the answer.
Well, right? And I want to put a bow on, we kind of put a bow on Baker Mayfield. I kind of want to put a bow on the Jarvis Landry conversation real quick too, because it ties into Will Fuller. Look, if the Browns wanted to keep Jarvis Landry, they would have kept Jarvis Landry. This constant dissection of Jarvis Landry and the contract he got from the Saints. And, well, why didn't the Browns do that? The Browns could have done that. Look, they didn't want to do it. That's why. They didn't want to do it, clearly. So, end of story. If they wanted to keep him, they could have. They decided not to. They made a business decision. They made a football decision. Endo storio.
Next.
Our next question comes from Joey C. at the Browns Fan 123 on Twitter. He has a question and a request. His request says, please share more stories of behind the scenes in past Browns years. Those are fun to hear, but we're going to put a pin in that because we're definitely going to do that later. So stay tuned, Joey C. We will get to that part. But his question is, do you think Perrion Winfrey makes a huge impact in the defense this year?
I'll lead for a second. The Browns better believe that he's going to, because the investment that they've made in that defensive front isn't what they've done in other positions. So, Darryl, that's the one spot that really scares me, is the interior defensive line. And if you're going to spend a fourth-round pick. I don't know what that means. Does that mean that he's got to play right away? No, but I hope he can. I mean, look, if he can live up to the words that are coming out of his mouth, he'll be an all-pro.
Yeah, I agree 100%. He really is a ball of energy. We've talked about it. And he looks big in person. Seeing him one-on-one, he looks like he's a pretty big guy. But he's going to get the opportunity, Joey. That's the answer to the question. I know that's not the crystal clear cut answer you're looking for, but he is going to get the opportunity. You look at the interior defensive line. You've got Tommy Togiai, fourth-round pick from last year out of Ohio State. Jordan Elliott right now I've got penciled in as one of the starting defensive tackles. I don't know if Sheldon Day or Taven Bryan is the other starting defensive tackle at this point. They've got another rookie, a couple of them, I should say, Glenn Logan and Perry are in there too.
Roderick Perry?
Yeah, Roderick Perry. So there's not a lot of depth on that defensive line, not named Myles Garrett. Let's just be honest about it. That's not to say they don't have talent at those positions. It's just right now it's an unknown quantity. So, yeah, Perrion Winfrey absolutely will have an opportunity to contribute. Will he? Unfortunately, we don't know that just yet. We'll see.
All right, we got two more questions. This one comes from at BrownsElf 2022. How important are relationships between media and players as well as media and fans?
When I look at that question, I just think, you know, questions don't matter a lot of times when it comes from the reporter, because it's the answers that matter when you're listening to what a player's saying, because that's really what the fans want. And I don't know, I've always felt like, and I'm sure I'm interested to hear what Darryl has to say about this too, that we've always been this conduit to try to be able to help you. Well, I think the conduit's changed dramatically because fans have the opportunity through social media to try to contact players one-on-one, and sometimes players want to respond, sometimes they don't. I do like social media sometimes because, especially for the players on one side, because it gives them the opportunity to say things in full sound bites. Like, you know, sometimes when we do a 2020, you're only going to hear like 15 seconds of what somebody said. So the one thing about, you know, new media, I think that is exciting is that it gives players a little bit more of an opportunity, but it also gives us, like, you know, even on this podcast, it gives us a chance to talk a little bit more about our feelings and our emotions sometimes. And I do think that the relationship between players and media is very, very important. And I think it helps out fans if there's a good relationship between the media and the players. We know what it looks like when it's ugly, and then people either want to turn on the media or they want to turn on the player. And the interesting thing is, and I think I learned this right away when I was covering the Indians when I was with them every day, and Darryl can speak to this too, that there's a huge difference between being a reporter that just jumps in every once in a while and doesn't really have a good feel for a locker room or a clubhouse, and someone who is there every day. There's a different relationship. And, you know, you get to build these relationships, and sometimes players want the story to be told. Sometimes they don't. And sometimes you're just sitting there and you're talking, and you really get to know these people. And I think sometimes when I look at people call someone a bum, it drives me nuts because – You know, a player who makes it to the highest level in sports, and this is just me talking as a sports person, it is impossible. I mean, look at the percentages of how high it is, how hard it is to become a professional athlete. And when I hear fans in the stands call someone a bum or call someone bad, or that guy is 1,000 times better than the best guy you ever played with in high school. And I think fans lose perspective of that sometimes because of the entertainment aspect of it. So I've always been really sensitive to that, about especially someone who would call someone a bum. Like, that drives me nuts, because if you don't spend 5 seconds with someone, I think that's kind of a personal attack. And these guys put tons of work into it. And yes, every once in a while we have guys that don't want to be there, and it's funny when the stories come out, but I don't know, that relationship is gigantic, and building those relationships, especially where Daryl is right now, it is like the lifeline of your livelihood. Correct?
Yeah, I mean, I would say critical. You know, there's nothing more uncomfortable than when a player is beefing with a member of the media, especially in the group setting now. And we've seen that the last couple of years, you know, with Baker Mayfield. There are times where it's just really uncomfortable to be around. And so I've always tried to treat players with respect. I'm there to convey their message to the fans. Social media today has afforded athletes the opportunity to convey their own message and not really have to use the media as much to do that. They can do it unfiltered. They can do it in a live environment as well. They can hop on Instagram Live, or Twitter has a live feature, tweets, Instagram posts. I mean, you know, all that kind of stuff becomes news. But yeah, it comes down to treating players with respect. I don't go into a locker room trying to get a guy. I don't go after guys. I'm not out to get anybody. I'm not out to make anyone look bad. I'm not out to make anyone look good. I'm not there to be anybody's friend. You know, I'm not there to go get beers with somebody after practice or whatever. That's not the job. My job is to convey to fans what's going on with the team and the players on the team. And sometimes the picture, especially over the years with the Browns, it's a very ugly picture to paint. I go back to the story I told on a previous podcast, right? Duke Johnson being very, very angry with me because I made a snide comment on Twitter on a video that I posted of guys dancing. Players are missing reps. Coaches are yelling at the players for missing reps. The team is not focused. They're not winning football games. So it got to a point where I felt fans really needed to know that you know, this is the clown stuff that was going on at practice. And this is part of the reason why they're not winning. and they don't seem to really care that they're not winning, even though deep down they do. And that's why Duke had the problem with me, because of course he cared about winning and losing games. And he felt personally insulted that I would say something like that. And so that happens. And anytime you have those disagreements with players, it's important to, you know, clear the air with that guy there, because again, you know, there's nothing worse than having an adversarial relationship. And I'll be honest with fans, there have been times in recent years where going to cover the Browns has felt like a 100% complete adversarial relationship and environment, and that's not the way it's supposed to be, and it's not the way it needs to be. It's not the way it should be. So yeah, it's important. Is it important for fans? My skin, obviously, I admit, needs to be thicker than it is, but it's tough when you get 1,000 people tweeting expletives and obscenities at you and vulgarities. It's tough to have thick skin in that regard. I try and channel what players and coaches always talk about as far as tuning out the noise. I get it, man. It's hard, man. It really is hard to tune out the noise. And I have a lot of respect for professional athletes. Like Andy said, I mean, they have reached the highest level of competitive sport, and they are paid professionally, and they're paid a lot of money, you know, to do right. what they do. And so there's some inherent built-in respect there, but I can't stress enough, I am never there to make somebody look bad or look good. I'm not there to be their friend. I'm not out to get anybody. I'm not, you know, I'm not out to attack somebody personally or even professionally. If the guy's not playing well, unfortunately, I got to say he's not playing well. The least favorite part of my job, believe it or not, is to say a team or a player sucks. I know that's shocking for people to hear because we do it so much, but
right.
I don't like doing it because, yeah, I can't do what they do. I can't. I'm not qualified. I'm not built for it. I don't have the mental skill. I don't have the physical skill. That's the least part of the job is to tell fans, yeah, your team sucks this year. Sorry. Quarterback sucks. Receiver sucks. Offensive lines. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it's not fun.
Right.
I much prefer covering, winning teams and because everyone's usually, most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, when teams are winning, guys are in good moods and stuff like that. Covering losing teams is just really, really hard because nobody wants to talk. The media is not wanted in the locker room because obviously a lot of the stories aren't very positive and the players don't want to deal with negative stories or negative storylines and stuff like that. But yeah, relationships matter in our business. Absolutely 100%.
And I'm going to add one little piece to this too. For an athlete to get good press, all they really need to do is say hi. I hate to say this. There's a difference between an athlete that walks around the clubhouse or walks around the locker room with a scowl on their face. Like, it's a pretty simple rule. I mean, like, if I see somebody, and we all know, you know, I'm not saying go out of your way to say hi to somebody, but if you're walking by somebody, you can always just say, hey, hey. And a reporter's going to look at that guy and go, oh, that guy's not such a bad guy. And then it becomes harder to write or say or have this bad attitude towards an athlete when all they had to do was say hi in the first place. I'm not expecting everybody.
Yeah, because if we know you don't like us already and we feel like we're already fighting the uphill battle, it's a lot easier. First of all, it's very uncomfortable, right? Because there are times like
isn't it amazing though?
I'll use Baker as an example. Like when Baker would come into the locker room, like I know that that's the last place Baker Mayfield wants to be. Now he was professional. He stood up there. He would answer the questions, but like I knew that that's the last place he wanted to be was answering questions from reporters, right? And that's right. something – that's not something you want to exude. Privately, you can be like, these dirty, rotten sons of guns and whatever, right? You never want to project that you hate the media because once the media knows you hate them, yeah, that – you know, and again, these guys are human beings. They have families who read and hear and see and all that stuff, and I'm sure they hear and see it as well. It does – the human element – unfortunately in our business does get lost, right? Because it's become media relationships today are a lot more antiseptic than they used to be because it's get in, get your soundbite, get out, or get in, get your quote and get out. Right. And there, the days of being able to just walk up and have a 20-minute conversation with a guy, those aren't there anymore because if players don't have to be in the locker room when the media is in there, they're not. They stay away. But, you know, remembering that these guys are people and not treating them transactionally, you know what I'm saying? Like just a name on a locker or a name on a door. And it's hard to do when you have an organization and a team that just has constant turnover and you don't get to know guys and they're here for a year or two and then they're gone. That makes it even more difficult when you have that revolving door. But yeah, you know, I always try and remember that these guys are human beings. They have families. They have this is their livelihood. This is their job. I think that it's important to remember that the human element that's involved.
All right, last out. Here we go. Last question.
One more question. I know we're running out of time, but I had to get this one in. This is from @Mike_Kavanaugh. Does Daryl have a burner account to see what Watson posts on Twitter?
Oh, my goodness. That's a great question. And the honest-to-God answer is no. I have one Twitter account, and that is it. fun story. So when the fan signed on in 2011 and I was hired, the company mandated that I include fan in my account because my account used to be at Right or Wrong.
Correct.
And they came to me and said, Daryl, you have to put fan in your account. You work for me. Okay, no problem. Within like 2 minutes of me changing my Twitter handle, somebody grabbed my original Twitter handle at Right or Wrong.
Oh, no.
And parked it. Yeah. And so I lost that. And there's a bunch of so understand, there is only one account that I have, and it's at Right or Wrong Fan. I don't have burner accounts. Look, I don't have the energy to run my own account at times, let alone to have a burner account. So I know that people do that. I know fans do it, and it's hysterical because I will block a fan because they said something that I consider to be offensive or disrespectful to me. And I'm like, well, fine, I'm going to do you the solid and block you because clearly you don't like me. And then you get upset because I block it. And I will see, hey, you're a jerk because you blocked this account. It's clearly their backup Twitter account. So I am amused that fans have those backup accounts or whatever. But I promise you, if it's not Right or Wrong Fan on Twitter, it is not me. I just don't have the time or energy to have secondary burner accounts. I really don't. And you know what? It doesn't matter. Like, it really doesn't matter enough to me to have a burner account as well. But great question. That I appreciate the chuckle. I kind of needed that.
He's Daryl Ryder, Meredith Kane. Outstanding job today. Thank you.
Baskin, do you have a burner account?
I do not have a burner account. I got
to
tell you.
I had to get you on the record.
No, I don't have a burner account. Especially like when we first started, I would get angry at some of the tweets we got on the radio, and then it would affect the whole show, and it would affect everything. And then all of a sudden, I found that mute button, and I found serenity.
At Game Day CLE is my burner account.
All right, kids, we got to roll. It was a great show. We'll talk to you again. Again, we'll probably drop another podcast on Monday, and we like to drop them on Mondays and Thursdays. So, but, you know, when something happens, we'll be right there for you, and we got you back. It's always Game Day in Cleveland, produced by Meredith Kane. Thank you very much. Daryl Ryder, that's him. I'm Andy Baskin. If you like what you are hearing, remember to subscribe to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland feed. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And in the future, if you want to be a part of the show, at Game Day CLE. It's always Game Day in Cleveland.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.